Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Let's start with something serious, very important, and certainly worthwhile of our constant attention. For most of us, the whole issue of asylum seekers and the detention centres that they wait in is out of sight. It's out of mind. It's only when something like this week happens that it's kind of back in our face again. And we were certainly given another reminder of the emotional suffering asylum seekers do go through after the suicide of the 36-year-old Fijian who jumped off the roof of Sydney's Villawood Detention Centre this week. There are, of course, desperate scenes as others from Iran, Iraq, Sri Lanka, Fiji and China held rooftop protests calling for their deportation notices to be cancelled and their situations to be reconsidered. Some were cutting themselves, others collapsed with exhaustion. All very dramatic stuff, all very concerning. Refugee advocates say their actions were a cry for help. Of course, for some Australians, for some of us, we say, is this just simply manipulation? Isn't it sad to think that? 1300 40 20 20 for your feelings. Dr. Louise Newman is the Professor of Psychiatry at Monash University and is a campaigner for better mental health services for asylum seekers. She's been doing that for a decade or so and she's on the line now. Dr. Newman, welcome to Open House and thanks for your time.
Thanks, Shane.
Let's first talk about the asylum seekers in Villawood who made headlines this week. What kind of backgrounds do these protesters come from?
Well, look, sadly, many of these people actually come from very difficult backgrounds. Some have been here for some time and have overstayed visas and so on, but many have genuine fears, deep-seated fears about return to their countries of origin. We have a variety of people there. Some are political dissidents. Some have been in serious trouble in their various countries and have sought asylum on the basis of that sort of persecution. And in some of the detention facilities, we have people who've experienced physical torture as well as psychological trauma. Some people have lost family members and have been in people have lost many families due to political murder, for want of a better word. So overall, we've got a very high-risk, very vulnerable group of people who then find themselves within an asylum-seeking system in Australia, which is actually very harsh. And I think we need to remember that Australia's decision to that we must detain every single asylum seeker who comes to this country is only done here and in Malta. But the rest of the world, the vast majority of asylum seekers are not detained for indefinite periods of time. Mm-hmm. So it's deeply concerning, I guess, to see some of this terrible level of despair, increasing frustration. But of course, we've seen this before in Australia during the days of Baxter and Woomera, which some people may recall, just not that long ago. So we do actually know that people stress to this degree are desperate people, and desperate people do desperate things.
As a psychiatrist, what does detention actually do to somebody who is in that situation, and how does it change over time?
Well, people's mental state deteriorates over time. Many of these people believe that they might be stuck there forever. They start to lose hope. Most individuals can cope for a short period of time with being detained if they feel that their claims are being fairly listened to and that they're involved in a process that they can understand. But when we have people detained for long periods of time or people who feel that they're not being fairly treated, that they're likely to be deported back to places that they're very fearful of, where they feel isolated and cut off, and that's obviously the case if you're in a desert facility or you're on Christmas Island, then what we see over time is an absolute increase in people's frustration, anxiety. People become depressed. And sadly, when people are in those states, they will protest, whether it's hunger striking, as we've got in Villawood at the moment, or even more extreme behaviours such as self-harming, which we've seen in Villawood, we're seeing at the moment in Christmas Island, Curtin. Now, the other thing I think we need to remember is some of these people are not adults, some of them are children. We have unaccompanied minors in the detention system. We have families with very young children, including babies, who are essentially prisoners. And many parents start to despair and feel very guilty about what they've actually brought their children to. They might have had very different hopes and wishes that they could actually protect their children, and yet they find themselves in some appalling conditions where they're very worried about the development of their children. So all of these factors are recipes for disaster from a mental health perspective, and we really have a system that in many ways is not sustainable. Ethically and morally, it's deeply troubling that a country as well-resourced and rich as Australia is harming people in this way, including children. So in many ways, the current situation, if anything good can come out of it, it's a radical rethink of the need to detain these numbers of people.
And psychologically, what happens when the step is taken to actually engage in self-harm? Is there kind of a particular trigger for that kind of behaviour?
Look, sometimes it's protest. Sometimes it's people feeling they have nothing left to lose. Sometimes it's a very clear way of trying to communicate the dilemma. If no one listens, they might listen if you hurt yourself. And that's a very sad, of course, position for people to be in. Now, we know from other situations, not just detention, that human beings who are very stressed and feel stuck, feel there's no other way of communicating their distress, will actually self-harm. And that's probably what we're seeing at the moment. Mm. Of course, that's deeply troubling when we see that in young children.
Love to hear people's thoughts. 1-300-40-2020. What do you think about our treatment of asylum seekers? Is it unfair? Is it actually inhumane? You might disagree completely. I'd love to hear your view as well. 1-300-40-2020. Dr. Louise Newman from Monash University is with us, and this is Open House across the nation. Now, of course, the political fact is that these people involved in the story this week actually had their claim of asylum rejected for whatever reason. So that needs to be brought into the conversation as well. Some will say, hang on, wouldn't the government maybe have a legitimate reason for that? And so where do we bring that into account? You know, you've got somebody who actually hasn't been accepted in for asylum, and then you've got the self-harming behaviour. It's a bit of a kind of stuck both ways situation.
Well, no, not really. I think the fact is that Australia takes very few asylum seekers and grants them refugee status. If you look at the worldwide situation around the globe at any one time, there's over 20 million people who are at risk, who are displaced. In Australia, we're talking about 5,000 people. And in a world, comparing that to other developed countries, it's actually a very limited number of people. And yet, for whatever reasons, Australia has a deep-seated and long-term reluctance to be more humane and open. I think this is a challenge to all of us. What we need to really look at the moment is, could we be more generous? Could we actually accept more people into the country who have genuine cases? Why are we sending people back who have stories of persecution and trauma? The other thing we need to ask ourselves is whether we need to detain people in desert and remote facilities, and why can't we look at a major policy shift and allow community processing for the majority? And those would be the vulnerable groups: children, unaccompanied minors, and people who've experienced torture and trauma. Mm-hmm. Those people pose no risk. They don't need to be imprisoned. We could be processing their claims in a more supportive way in the community.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that a little bit more. As you were saying, that it's only Australia and Malta that have the mandatory detention for asylum seekers when they come to the country.
Yes.
So most other countries actually work on this kind of... paint a picture of actually how it works. They actually are released into the community to whom?
Well, I think it's quite easy. People have health and security checks as a necessary in all these situations, and then they're in community housing and they go through the normal processing that takes the departments of immigration sometimes a bit of time. They have to present themselves for interviews and be available, and they're closely monitored, but they're supported. It's much cheaper, it's much more humane, and in the vast majority of cases, Australia could be doing exactly the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And so the idea would be that then they're released into the community. Again, some will raise the issue of the security aspect. You know, we've got these boundaries, these, kind of tightened policies around, say, Sri Lankan asylum seekers at this present moment of time. Where do you go with those kinds of concerns?
Well, I think obviously if there are security issues, that's a different matter. But I think we need to remember there's been about five people arriving in Australia in the last 10 years where there have been significant security concerns. Obviously, those people are dealt with in a tighter detention centre model, but that doesn't apply to those people where there are no security risks, who've been assessed by the authorities, as they should be, who need to be in the community and just processing their claims in a normal way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, a few calls have come in. Kylie, hi, and thanks for calling. What's your story?
Hi, how are you?
Well, thank you.
My husband was actually in the Lord Detention Centre and was there for quite a while. But I just wanted to say, you know, sometimes it is real, and yes, it does happen, but, you know, he was sent back, but with God's grace upon my life, it just, I'm still fighting.
So, you know, can you give us a few more details? Where is he coming from, and how long was he in Villawood?
Lebanon. Yeah, and he was in detention, Villawood Detention Centre, for about 18 months.
Right, yeah.
And it's hard, you know. You do see all the rest of them that they're there as well, and you live it.
So were you married in Lebanon, then you came back home, or how did it work out?
He was here for 5 years, and we were married, and waiting for visas and everything else, and they cancelled his visa, which made him an illegal immigrant, and that's how he was taken to Villawood.
Okay. Did you know that this was probably going to come? Were you expecting that there might be some visa problems for your husband?
Yes and no. We had spoken to the immigration department. It went, you know, through court, all the rest of it. We assumed that they would give us the visa because that's what they said, but then it didn't happen, and that's how he ended up in Villawood.
Mm. And he was there for 18 months?
Yep.
Okay, that's a long time. What did he describe to you that he was experiencing? You obviously were able to go and visit every, weekly or so?
Oh, you can go visit every day.
Yeah.
Well, that's how it was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
He experienced depression. You know, it was just a fact of, you know, you're outside and then you go in and, you know, it's like a jail practically.
Mm.
And, you know, it was hard for him. Every day was hard.
And how many years ago did you say this was?
The year 2000, he left here.
So your husband has been back in Lebanon for 10 years. You've been separated for 10 years now?
Yep.
And you're still working on trying to get a visa for him to come to Australia? So how does that work for you, Kylie? That's really quite a situation. You go over there how often to see him?
Yep, try every 6 months.
Yep.
A year to go over. Because I have a son. We have a 12-year-old son.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's hard, but you've got to do it.
Kylie, what a story. So for 10 years you've been... But they'll be writing up the story and putting it on the film, you know, on the big screen.
You know, a lot of legal stuff, and, you know, it just happens that it's just what happens, you know. You just got to cope, and with God's grace upon my life, that's the only way I have.
Are you expecting that things might change? Or, I mean, 10 years down the track, I mean, what hope do you have that things will change?
Well, there's always hope in you know, God that, you know...
Yeah.
There's changes.
Yeah.
What
can
you do?
Well, you keep on hoping. All right. Thanks for calling, Kylie. Good to hear from you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate that. Professor Louisa Newman from Monash University. There we go. It's actually quite a dramatic story in terms of somebody waiting 18 months to 2 years in Villawood and then actually going back home and they've got a spouse here in Australia.
Look, sadly, there are many stories like that. There are some people who have been seeking resolution of their visa status for up to 10 years. Now, Australia has the dubious record of having detained children. The longest that I'm aware of is two Cambodian children who were detained for 7.5 years.
Mm.
We have sent back to countries of origin people who've lived for 24 years free in the community here. We have some very celebrated cases where people were illegally and inappropriately removed from the country. So the track record, if you want to go through the cases, is actually very poor.
Mm. Can you just touch again on the effect of detention on children and what you see as a psychiatrist in their lives, again, particularly as it progresses over time for them?
Well, for children, of course, it's utterly devastating to be in very restricted environments. In the days of Baxter and Woomera, many children had limited education, toys, play facilities. They had parents who were depressed. They had staff who were not trained in how to work with children. We saw children with depression. We saw children with post-traumatic stress disorder, high levels of emotional and psychological problems. And some of those, of course, are persistent problems. So I'm still treating children who I saw initially in Baxter and Woomera in 2001 who still have psychological difficulties today.
Mm. I was going to ask that. What degree of psychological care do asylum seekers in detention get?
Look, I think some of these difficulties are persistent, are long-term, and really impact on children's capacity to function. And bear in mind that these were children, 99% of the children who were detained were then found to be genuine refugees released into the community. And to have them end up with psychological problems has in fact been a huge burden on mental health services. And this is, you know, a huge amount of money that's actually paid for by the Australian community.
Mm. And what degree of psychological help do they actually receive, though, over time?
Well, it's very variable. There are some refugee mental health services who would be able to see them, but we have very limited resources in this country to actually address the problems that asylum seekers and refugees face. I think that's also something that government needs to seriously look at, whether we can actually improve the system so that those people who then end up in the community have the right sort of psychological support.
Mm. Louise, you are actually on an advisory board responding to the government's
yes.
thoughts and ideas about this. Are you hopeful that there is going to be any movement here? We don't seem to be hearing any kind of change of heart from both sides of major government.
No, this is a backward step, but if anything good comes of it, it will be that it's a chance to radically rethink the policy situation that we have at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And finally, just what would you say to those Australians who actually do feel these protests were kind of a stunt to try and manipulate the government?
I think most Australians understand that people who are in desperate situations do desperate things. Manipulation is not particularly a word that I think is useful to describe the behaviour that we're seeing. It is despairing behaviour. Any of us, if we were in these circumstances, I would like to think, would seek asylum for ourselves, for our children. It's a genuine desire to have a better life. And Australia has a responsibility to live up to the various UN conventions that we are voluntary signatories to. And I think for your audience, obviously, it's important to think about this in a moral dimension. Mm. This is a moral question for the Australian community.
Mm. Very much so. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Sharon.
Professor Louise Newman there from Monash University.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.